Got it. Thank you, Ray. That was really, really helpful. I'm just conscious about how we as Christians can remain distinct. How can we publicly show our support and support our Black friends without becoming caught up in this political, you know, the negative elements of the political, this political...
Question is, how can we support... are you saying support Black Lives Matter without getting involved in the politics?
Well, I'm not even sure about that. I mean, I think we have to look carefully about what they stand for. I mean, there are certain things that they're calling for, like defunding the police, which are really problematic. So I guess I'm just finding it really tricky to be distinct as a Christian while being supportive
I think as we talk to people about issues, perhaps we need to think about engaging on a personal level with people that we know and come into contact with. And I think you're right, there are concerns and issues with Black Lives Matters as a movement, as a political entity. It was started by three Black women in the US in response to Trayvon Martin's killing. One of them wrote a love letter to America in which she coined the phrase Black Lives Matter. And we can all agree with that, can't we? That Black lives do matter. But we also, as Christians, know why all lives matter. It's not just Black lives that matter. We know why, and that's what I've been trying to explain in my first, my last 3 points, that because we have the Bible, we know that each person is created in God's image, regardless of the crimes they've committed, regardless of their ethnicity, their age, etc., etc. And I think that's a distinct message that we want to get across when we have opportunity. In other words, we want to talk about the Bible's perspective. We can agree with people in terms of justice. Justice is a good thing, and it's but I think in this case, justice is being done in that the men responsible are being held accountable. And that's something that we should applaud and welcome and support. But ultimately, we also need to recognise one of the things I think the Bible does, it enables us to have a realistic view of reality. So, for example, we're never ever going to get rid of racism, because racism is something that comes out of the human heart. So we need to recognise that. And the only agent of change, of real change in this world, is the gospel. And so we need to trust in the gospel. So I think that perspective is important. Things won't be achieved politically because politics can't change people's hearts. Only the gospel can.
No, that's really helpful, Ray, and certainly in our studies in Raymond's that we've been looking at over the last few weeks, looking at our response to authority and how God does put authorities in place, and that although authority is flawed, you know, as you say, these guys are being brought to justice, and God, and there's actually been lots of really great responses from authority in America. Lots of state troopers, lots of police departments that have come out and done some really amazing things. So that's great. I guess I'm just worried about apathy as well. Why apathy? Because I'm not apathetic. But there's only so much kind of empowering that I can, and egging on of my white friends that I can do. So that's something about encouraging Black people to speak up without anger, I think.
I think
a lot of what speak up because we're scared. We're scared of being called racist. And we're actually, we're scared of that, probably that trope of the angry Black person.
Yeah.
You know, we know that trope, the angry Black woman, the angry Black man. Diagnosis of psychosis, mental illness is so high because of perceptions of the way Black present.
Yeah, that's right.
And the way is the way with white British people present, you know, the people stiff upper lip and things like that.
I think in all that's why the church is really important, and in some ways we can't maybe do things on a massive scale, but I do think on a personal level in our relationships we've got to try to get to know each other. And as I was saying in my talk, I think one of the things that white people can do is educate themselves in terms of where Black people are coming from, understand issues, do some reading, give Black people the opportunity to explain their experiences. And I think the church is a great place where that can happen. But as I suggested, sometimes we settle for a very superficial, now, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. And that's the level of our engagement with one another. Whereas when we actually listen to one another's stories, we hear where one another's coming from. So I think within the church, we've got a great opportunity to get to know one another and not settle for. When someone shares a testimony in church, we're often amazed at what they've been through, what they've gone through, and we're surprised by it. But actually, in our everyday conversation with one another, we should perhaps dig a bit deeper than just, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's a lot to learn from one another because of the diversity in a city like London. And it's not just the church, but in our workplaces. You know, I would say at the moment, to all white individuals, intentionally seek out someone of a different background, especially black people at this time, and just try to listen to where they're coming from, and try not to get defensive, but hear, learn why they ask some questions as to why they feel the way they have been feeling, or how are they thinking about these things. And if nothing else, you'll get an education. There are lots of reasons why we're scared about doing that. Marie, yes, Marie, go for it.
I, as somebody of colour who is triple heritage, my mum's white, my sister's white, my grandmother on my mum's side is white. I've also definitely have a Bayesian side, and I've got roots even in India. But even, I guess you could say, even me, I've definitely experienced direct racism even in 2020. And I've definitely experienced lots of subtle prejudice. Been told as well, you know, go back to your own country when I was in year seven. So not too long ago, a while ago, but not too long ago. It made me feel rubbish, made me feel small. And I think, you know, in those moments, this is where injustice can happen. People can kind of like take the power in those moments, right, and run, you know, be the confident talker in the classroom, you know, being with the popular crowd and that kind of thing, whilst that person is unfairly, you know, held down. And I think this still happens, and sadly I've seen that despite, you know, the model that Jesus has given to all of us, sadly sometimes this really does still happen in our churches. And sadly, people of colour, including myself along the way, can inadvertently, I think, be complicit in the way that, you know, non-white, black and brown people and people of colour who are also women and this and that and have other things going on are held down unfairly. Is anybody more willing than previous to reading some of the books that I recommended here? And is anybody beginning to become more aware of moments where they may have been defensive when confronted with challenges to one's sense of equality or justice? Is anybody changing their position as yet, maybe?
Are you asking people in this group to answer that question?
Yeah. Any confessions? Yeah.
Anyone want to... Judy, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I do. Can you see it? I'm reading this book.
Yes. Large. Yeah, yeah. I know Michael Cassidy, yes.
You know him. Okay.
I know of him, yes.
So, and right now I was, before all this came about, when we were in our real lockdown position, I suddenly had this overwhelming desire. I shared this in my home group. I actually was on my knees and I was crying and I said, Lord, I'm so sorry for anything I did in the apartheid area. Mm. I thought that I had called out injustice, I'd worked, I've just read this part about Steve Biko. And my sister was a journalist under Donald Woods at the time. So my whole family was totally involved in the thing, but I still felt I had to ask God's forgiveness for anything that I was complicit in. I don't think the racism is overt. Yeah. It's very subtle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of the time. And I just find people here in this community incredibly, incredibly wonderful. I've made friends in where I live with a lovely, lovely Jamaican couple. They're probably my best friends here. exactly what you said. We have to do it on a personal basis. We can't change the world, really. Although yeah. I do try.
Yes.
Something that's bothering me right now is that it's almost in reverse. I was speaking to her from a South African friend, and she said to me, do they know over there how many white farmers are being killed daily?
Yeah.
And so we don't want to build up any race tensions at all.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I was trying to do in my talk is just present how complex and complicated the issues are. And I think we've got to be very, very careful of what we see in the media and making snap decisions and having very fixed opinions about things. It's a very complex issue. There are lots of issues swirling around. And we need to separate the issues out and just be very careful about coming to quick judgments about things. Anyone else want to ask a question or make a comment or confess as Marie has suggested?
It's a comment that I need to make about, for instance, in the States.
Yes.
Where there's been concerted effort over the decades to raise the standard for the black child in the school.
Yeah, yes.
And what they have done systematically, time and again, is let the black child off the hard stuff on the understanding, well, they really can't do this.
Yeah.
So when it gets to university, the standard you have to reach with the SATs to get into university, they have been lowered so often. And in doing so, taken in blacks who should not be in that university doing that particular subject.
Yeah.
But there's a terrific guy called Thomas Sowell, who was from a very, very tough background, who saw the need as a kid to actually work hard in school. He became extraordinarily clever in the realm of economics and sociology and had top jobs in universities. One particular job that he was doing was in the black university in Washington. I think it might be called Georgetown University. It's for all blacks. When he got there, he was taken on as head of that department, his particular subject. And he was appalled by the standard that was being expected. And it was because of the general view throughout the United States that blacks can't do as well, so we have to lower the standard. And he set about, in the few years that he was there, fighting for his students to reach the standard that he knew they needed to reach. And, of course, he was running a very good department. Eventually, he did leave there because nobody else on the staff would measure up. He was fighting, and he left a very good department, but as to whether it remained good, I don't know. But I see this in this country of England, in the education system. There is this fundamental view that somehow, because he's black, because he's from a mixed-race family and so on, he is not actually able to reach the standard.
Yeah, yeah. Yes,
It's insidious.
Yes.
And it's wrong.
I've got a question that someone has raised. How do you explain to teenagers when they are angry, especially? A lot of teenagers or young people have been very much caught up in the whole what's been happening in recent weeks and months. I think one of the things we've got to do is sit down and talk with them. In fact, we did a talk, Simon Abrams and myself were involved in a youth meeting last Sunday where we were trying to raise some of these issues and talk about them with some of our young people. I think we've got to help our young people understand some of the complexities of the issues involved and help them to see that sometimes some of the things they hear, the sound bites that they hear, are only part of the problem or part of the issue, and just allow them to educate them in a broader way so they don't go away with only part of what is true and right. It's not easy, but we need to have forums where they can talk about these issues and ask questions, but I think we've got to make sure we're nuanced in our answers and not simply one-dimensional in a way that will not really help them to see the issues involved. That would be my my initial answer. I don't know if anyone else has got any more wisdom who've raised children. What would you add to that, Gillian? You've got three grown children.
It's been such a normal part of their growing up. And thankfully, they've grown up in Lewisham. So there are lots of people in the same boat. And they have, in their individual ways, dealt with the problems that have arisen. And I think it's by the grace of God that they are where they are. And I know that there are still problems, but it's not something that envelops them at all.
Yeah. I think the younger generation will be better than my generation and the generation before them, because you know, they live in a world that's much more global and much more open to different ethnic groups and different ideas and different opinions. So I'm more hopeful for some of our younger generation than for some of the older ones. Has anyone got a question they want to ask?
Can I make just a comment that come back on your exhortation, Ray, to get to know each other and to speak? And I'm sure that a great church, how many churches are here? Quite a few churches, I'm sure. But, and I think as part of that, it'd be great if the church community, you know, could be very intentional about treating each other with graciousness and respect. And indeed, great. It would be great if the culture looking in could see that the church is an area where grace, you know, reigns. So in the culture, what we see is morality without forgiveness or mercy. It's absolutely terrifying, isn't it? You say the wrong thing. You try to speak up, you say people of colour rather than coloured people, the other way around. I can't even remember what the vocabulary is. And then, you know, you're subject to people saying that you should lose your job, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be great if we could, it could be apparent to the world that actually within the church, look, these guys treat each other really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope that would always be the case in conversations that take place, you know, in our communities.
I think that's exactly right.
We've got this this kind of concept of a safe space.
Yeah.
And the church should be a safe space where you can explore things and not worry about saying things badly or incorrectly.
Yeah.
Because you kind of know where people are coming from.
Yeah.
And I've been called out by a black friend for using the wrong terminology about black people. You know, so it's like, I don't know what the right term is. I think I said people of colour. You said, don't you call that as... So it's like, we need a safe space where we can actually talk about these things. And I think the important thing is, we should see people of different races as being worth exploring.
Yeah.
Not that we don't see colour, but actually because they're different, let's explore. What does it mean in your situation? Not to be intrusive, but just to say, just not to ignore the fact that they're from a different culture. They've been brought up in a different, with a different background. I was brought up in the Caribbean. As I got to know some of my African friends, I'm astonished at how different their experiences and their cultural background. And it's just wildly different from mine. But actually, that's just because we've actually just started exploring what's it like.
Yeah.
And sometimes you might say something a little bit clumsily. And, you know, the church needs to be a place where you can say something clumsily without being called out, without being made to be embarrassed. And then we can be, you know, as God's family, but recognizing and rejoicing in the difference as opposed to ignoring it, but actually becoming stronger and better because of that, because we are diverse, but one in Christ.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
May I ask, please, as a mum to a relatively young child, so my daughter, for some of you know, is 12, and as a believing mum, I just feel that, you know, in spite of the teaching about how much harder as black people we have to try in order to survive and make it in life and in the workplace, you know, parents have this sense of their children as human beings. And certainly as a mum, I have a sense of my daughter as a kind of full person with a humanity, as Simon has and Ravi seem to be also expressing. And I think that, therefore, this just emphasises the need for a safe, relaxed space in which to raise our children, so that we're not putting too much pressure on children. Children can have a voice and feel comfortable to express it along their learning journeys, along their spiritual growth. I can say, you know, this is a bit too much. You know, I'm not at a certain standard yet. I don't have a certain skills in place now. Can you say that in the home and in the church? At least they can say it there and with us. You know, we're not objectifying. We're not seeing them as the black child that has to achieve. We're seeing them from within as a person and, you know, alongside them.
Yep. Don't have a problem with that. I've got a question on, I think this comes from Facebook. Do you have any comments on the landscape in Bible training colleges or pastors training? I've been so aware of how bold my sisters in Christ of colour have been to attending women's training courses because they have been so in the minority. How can we get a place where this improves? We do need to just be aware that sometimes we approach the Bible from a particular mindset, maybe a Western mindset, but sometimes doesn't do justice to the breadth of different cultures and different ethnicities that are reflected in the Bible. And sometimes that comes across in our theological education. But I think it's a great thing. We do need to encourage diversity within training, in the same way that we need to encourage it in companies and across the board. Black people often, or ethnic minorities often underrepresented, and that's something that we need to be aware of and try to address. So I'm slightly distracted by someone. Does anyone want to add? Simon and Ravi, want to add anything to that?
I think we need to be more generous with people from different cultures. I think sometimes the way that our Bible training is and our preaching, there is a particular style, and that style is meant to be the right style. And you hear people coming from some of the training colleges and they all sound the same.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, if you come from a different background and a different culture, maybe you're more expressive. I remember Don Carson talking about how his African theologians were much better at preaching narrative because they're storytellers, whereas Western Christians are much better at Paul's letters because they're analytical and you can get your 3 points from it. And they're both both faithful, and we can learn from both, but they're very different. And actually, there's an element of saying there is not one style. And one way of doing things, which is the right way of doing things. And I think maybe we in the congregation need to get better at hearing different styles of preaching and not judging them with a very narrow lens.
Yes, definitely, yeah. I'm just looking for any other questions. Anyone else got a question or comment they want to make?
As a postscript to what I said earlier about standards, it is an insult to children to get them to allow them to think that their standard is inevitably lower, and therefore we will make allowances for you. It is an insult, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what was happening in the States decades ago. They started lowering the standard for getting into university. And in so doing, they were lowering the standard altogether in universities, that they were not doing as well as they should have been doing. And it is very bad. It's a subtle way of being, what's the word?
Patronizing.
Yes, yes, that'll do very well. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you do an awful lot of harm to children when you get them to think that actually I don't have to work so hard, don't have to reach that standard, because I am not able to. I'm not with it, I can't do it. But of course I can, with good teaching.
That's right.
Yes, thank you, Julian. That is very true. Thank you for that. It's very patronising. And that also sadly still happens in Lewisham. You're very right. Thank you for that. Yes, it's very wrong and insulting.
Yes.
Can I ask this question, Ray, as well, to the black people on this call? I, living in South London, I observe elements of black culture which are really worrying to me, especially around the use of the word, I don't want to say the word, but you know the word I mean, like the one that begins with N.
Yeah.
In music, in film. And I also observe marijuana smoking as well, which I know is extremely bad for your mental health and obviously lots of other reasons as well, socially. And I'm not saying only black people do that, because plenty of white people do, right? So this is really, really difficult topic to talk about, can you comment on that? Can you say, what is that debate around the use of that word? How can we call it out without being called racist? Because I know there was a movement to reclaim that word. And how can we bridge that gap between saying that is a, you know, there are certain cultural differences, but there are other cultural differences which are damaging to that culture?
Yeah. Simon, did you want to say something?
There is a dominant black stereotype, which if you grow up in London, if you're a young person, you may feel you have to buy into it. So you have people from Jamaican backgrounds and Nigerian backgrounds and Ugandan backgrounds and Belgian backgrounds, all trying to replicate this one black stereotype, because actually in the media and in music, they see this is what it is to be a black person. Yeah. And then you have elements of, are you black enough? Are you, you know? And
you're coked up?
Yeah. And that's a real challenge. And the issue is we need a much more diverse range of black people. We need more Sheku Kani Masons who plays the cello, which, you know, Trevor Noah's thing is the whitest thing you can do. my dad grew up listening to black opera singers, and he particularly liked black opera singers like Gillian's ex-husband Willard White and others. You know, we don't see a diverse range of black role models in very different circumstances. So the only thing that people see is the dominant culture, which is almost wholly negative.
Yeah.
It's not completely all negative, but it has so many negative overtones. It's anti-academic. It's anti-intellectual. It's often quite angry. It's misogynistic often, and families aren't sort of promoted. That's a real problem, and we need to have more black role models in very different walks of life. So the kids grow up seeing that actually to be black doesn't mean that you have to be like this. And people have to, you know, black kids are having to fight off, if I am black, then I should be like this. All the time. And it's a real issue. And I think we need more Marcus Rashford, a footballer worried about free school meals. We need more people who are concerned about real issues, who are doing different things. We need black people in business who are not just talking about race issues, but they're talking about the thing which they do, and not just the only people who are put up are talking about race issues. No, it's just like, if you're a doctor, talk about being a doctor. If you're a lawyer, talk about being a lawyer. Don't talk about, you know, you just happen to be a lawyer, but actually that's not what you're on the platform to talk about. And I think that's a societal issue. So you're right to identify it. It is an issue. And within safe spaces, we should be able to say, I have simplified it because it's not that straightforward. And I've probably got elements of it wrong just to kind of make the point. But it is nuanced and it is complex. But there is a dominant sort of stereotype, which, you know, most of us who are black feel kind of drawn to, because that's kind of, this is what it means to be black. Have you got rhythm? Yeah. You're black, you've got rhythm. You don't have rhythm, then you're not really black. You know, it's a whole mix of things which comes through. And if that's kind of part, if that becomes your identity, then it's really hard to say, you know, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do ballet. I want to do cello. I want, you know, that's seen as being not really an option.
Yes. Can I just add one thing to that, just moving away from the societal thing, which is, I mean, everything Simon says is obviously very right, but just to the sort of micro-environment which we live in, this area of South East London, and I think Ray has said in one of his other talks, which we've been listening to, that representation matters as well. Raising up leaders who look like you is a good thing.
Yeah.
And so perhaps one of the things we could do that's intensely practical is actually try to support black leaders into Christian ministry. I mean,
yeah.
There's a church, New Life Church Catford, that I know would love extra support. Which is trying to do that. And I think that's sort of an intensely practical thing that we, outside the black community, might be able to do to try and help promote positive role models.
Yeah.
The men in that church are excellent positive role models. It'd be great if they could stay in full-time Christian ministry and that church expands and grows and serves the community in that way. There are things we can do as Christians in the micro-environment which we live in, even if we can't get all the black kids to take up ballet. The other thing I'd say from a Christian perspective, was it Hannah? Part of the narrative there was, smoking marijuana, they're damaging themselves. And I think, as Christians, obviously, Christ died for us while we were yet sinners. So to some extent, as Christians and as the Christian church, we hold out God's grace, God's support, we do all we can for people. Even if, frankly, it's entirely their own fault. I'm not saying it is here, but even if it were, it really wouldn't change what we have to do in response.
There
are a couple of questions that have come through around the area of protesting. What is the right way to protest, and what do you think about pulling down statues?
Well, we're in a democratic country and we can lawfully protest. We are allowed to protest. That's part of what it means to live in a democratic society. But we do need to do it in a lawful way. Breaking the law while protesting is clearly not acceptable. Romans 13 makes it clear that we need to respect the governing authorities. When we do protest, we need to make sure it's lawful. That would be the first comment I'd make. In some countries, when you protest, you get clamped down on it very violently. We don't live in that kind of country, thank the Lord. So we can protest, make our voices heard without breaking the law. But if we do, then the governing authorities, according to Romans 13, are perfectly within their rights to take actions to stop us from breaking the law. So let's not go beyond the bounds that the law requires, that the law stipulates. In terms of pulling down statues, well, I suppose the Edward Colson one is the one that comes to mind in Bristol. I suppose it's worth knowing some of the background behind that. Apparently, for quite a number of years, people in Bristol have been protesting about the removal of this statue because it was well known that he was involved in the slave trade. Apparently, at one point, the company he worked for trafficked about 84,000 black men, women and children from West Africa to the Americas. So I think I can understand why people wanted to remove that statue. And I can also understand people's frustration because they had been trying to get rid of this statue lawfully for a number of months, years even, and nothing happened. But that doesn't really excuse what they did was unlawful. But that kind of background does help us to understand why it was done. But I still think I would reiterate that these things need to be done lawfully. And we've got to be careful that our frustration doesn't spill over into violence or unlawfulness. I think Romans 13 is very clear. As Christians, we need to respect the governing authorities. But removal of Colson's statue was a culmination, I think, of people's frustration, having tried to get rid of it over a number of years. And then I think we need to be clear, because then there was a possibility that Winston Churchill's statue could have been damaged or defaced. And I think we need to make a distinction between we've got to where we draw the line. You know, Colson was someone who was in the business of selling human cargo. Churchill was a flawed human being who, while bringing us through the Second World War, may have had views that we would find unpalatable, but actually if we dig deep enough and long enough, I think we can probably find dirt on every everyone who's got a statue in the UK somewhere. So I think we need to draw a distinction between those who were actively involved in the slave trade and those who perhaps had views that we wouldn't necessarily agree with here and now. So that would be my... I don't know if anyone else wants to add. Marie.
Thanks. Well, to me, I guess we can look at the structure of the Bible, just consider that history is quite important.
Yeah, definitely.
To
yeah.
message. And, you know, it's not a thing to look to erase the history, is it? You know, we might forgive, but I think remember the past. And working in New Cross and working at Goldsmiths and working in Fordham Park, I've seen how, you know, groups have campaigned left and right around monuments that deal directly with equality and social justice in our neighbourhood. The fight to remember has been winning a little bit over recent years.
Mm.
So now, as we saw in our fellowship group, you know, the words like, you know, remembering how whites and black people united against racism and fascism, all of that language is now, well, currently or temporarily remembered in New Cross. Students don't want to tear down so much some of the logos around Deptford Town Hall, which show how Goldsmiths and the Crown got its wealth and all of that. So for me, as a believer and somebody that's really into racial equality, I don't necessarily need to tear down. And as you said, Ray, I certainly don't want to sin in my righteous anger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think we need to think carefully, though. But, I mean, it's been said, though, hasn't it, that when you put a monument up, you are venerating, you are exalting the individual. So I think it needs to be thought carefully about the kind of people that we do venerate in that way, or celebrate. Celebrate's a better word, celebrate, by having them and their statues and images. But it's a tricky area, and we've got to be careful about how we go about doing those things. Have you got another question, Rebecca? And this will be the last one, I think, because it's almost 9:30 if you do. I think, Rob, did you have something you want to say?
Yeah, just picking up on your... it's been a really helpful discussion, everyone. It's one question in terms of your presentation. I think you quoted a student that emailed you.
Yes.
Talking about colour... Yeah, a guy said to him,
yeah,
colourblind, the colour. And I just... it'd be interesting to... I can imagine people saying that, perhaps in good spirit, and I guess it's been interpreted in an unhelpful or in a way which has taken offence.
Yeah.
This whole dilemma of in the church, interesting, isn't it, that Paul in Galatians 3:28 says there's neither Jew nor Gentile, slave nor free, male or female. So in what sense are we supposed to see each other as different, and what sense are we supposed to see each other as the same in the church, is a question in my mind. And, you know, I can ask it because it's an open forum.
Yeah.
Hear from other people how they take those types of comments.
Does anyone want to have a stab at that one?
As a personal comment, so, you know, bear with me if it lands badly, but talking about representation in the church, well, I mean, as someone who is neither black nor white, and certainly in our church, for the churches I've attended, there are generally a smattering of black people. They're often really white is the dominant culture, but there aren't many people who look like me, mainly because Asians will be either Muslim or Hindu. I have found it helpful to try and think of brothers and sisters as simply just there as colourblind. I have found it quite difficult personally, at an emotional level, when there's this very strong emphasis, often for the black community, that we have to be very cognizant of race. Because then it really underlines to me that actually I'm different from absolutely everybody. Not just from the majority, but absolutely everybody. So I would very much welcome some thoughts for you. Well, why is it offensive to say I don't think of you in that way? Why was that such a bad thing to say?
Yeah.
I guess one of my questions would be, if you're a man and you said to the women in church, I don't see you as a woman. Being a woman is fundamental to who they are. And we are to see them as women. Being a black person is fundamental to who they are. We are to see. And it means something. It's like, if you're talking to a woman, it means something. She will have different experiences to you, different thoughts different, kind of emotions, different perspectives. And the same is true of people from different ethnicities, because they see the world very differently, because they've come from a very different culture, and actually it's worth exploring that, as opposed to ignoring it and pretending it doesn't exist.
Yeah. I think sometimes when and from my experience, when people say, express that idea that I don't see you in that way, perhaps what they mean is that's not the primary way in which I see you. And obviously there's an issue there with what people express and what is understood. So a personal experience is, if I'm walking down the street and I pass a black man, the primary thing I might see first is a black man passing. Whereas when I have people within the church family who I know well, that isn't the primary thing that I see. The primary thing that I see is it's Simon, who's a brother in my church. So I guess in some ways that's sometimes I think the idea that's being expressed, rather than trying to suggest that that aspect of you isn't valued. Does that make sense?
I hear where you're coming from, yes. Yeah, it's good to get that perspective, isn't it? I do think that, sorry, Mira, I'll come back to you in just a sec, but I do sometimes, there is an element of, we live in politically correct times, and one of the things we've got to be careful is that we're not oversensitive, but what Simon says, I think, also still holds. Sorry, Marie.
Roy Ruffy's phrase, and not answer the question. Just that as I guess a mixed race woman and a mum, I really, really, really appreciate, without wanting to be patronising here, your, I think, genuine sense that, you know, you do see people, you can see people now as people, you see your friends that way. And I really appreciate that. As a mum, I remember angrily reporting to somebody who was telling my toddler that she was black. I remember doing that despite my mum raising me and telling me that I was black. And I remember doing that. And because for me, like, I really do feel like it's fundamental that even in the fight for equality, that we do remember our shared humanity as the aim. However, it isn't the situation. And I think that's why, as Ravi and others have pointed out, that we need to, if we're going to be supporting people and being a friend in that way, that then we might think of them as, in terms of their social needs, their racial needs, that as a black person they need this. They might think about being safe in a workplace like this, that their attainment goals might come afoul because of this and that kind of thing. They might be stopped by the police at a very young age. But if they're aware of their blackness, then maybe they might not be. So, like, it's helpful to help people remember that actually we are in different situations, but still see them as people as much as...
Yeah, I think... I still think it comes down to personal relationships. As we make the effort to get to know one another and talk to one another, these things come out. How we feel about what we prefer to be called, how we prefer to be viewed, all those things will come out as we talk and engage in a much more deeper level. And then misunderstandings, upsets can be ironed out as we get to know one another and talk about these things. That's why I think the church is such a wonderful place where we can do that. Well, folks, I'm conscious it's gone 9:30, so I'm going to close our time together in prayer. And if you want to stay on for a few more minutes and maybe ask some more questions, feel free to do that. But after I finish praying, feel free to sign out. Let's commit our time together to the Lord in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the time we've been able to have to talk about these some very sensitive issues. Please help us as we try to continue to build relationships, as we think about these issues, try to get to know one another, hear one another's stories, and accept one another, because in Christ you accept us in the gospel. So please help us, Lord. May this be the beginning of a conversation that helps us to better navigate these issues. And we ask these things for Jesus' sake. Amen.
Amen.
Oh, hi, can I ask a question?
Hi, Emma.
Say something about some books we should be reading.
Oh, yes, I can. Let me share a screen with you and just show you the books that I recommended. These were the books that I was recommending. Ben Lindsay, he's a pastor. He was the pastor of Emmanuel New Cross, which was a New Frontiers plant from the church in Greenwich. He's a black guy, lives in Catford, I think, now. And he's written a very helpful book, Why We Need to Talk About Race. And then Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. I think that's a good book that everyone should read. Really, both these two books I think are really good. But I was convinced theologically by Bruce Mill about why church needs to be more diverse. And it's not just the Ephesians 2, he kind of shows you, it's all over the Bible. So these would be the books that I'd recommend. There are probably several others, but these three I'd certainly recommend as a starter.
Thank you. And did you say, because I heard you say something about, or one of the others said something about New Life Church Catford. Mm. Are there ministry training schemes we can be supporting?
They don't have ministry training people yet, although that may come in time. But I think Ravi was just talking about there are two good black ministers there. And it was in the context of talking about role models and wanting to have positive role models come up for the young people so they don't just gravitate towards the drug dealers or the gangster kind of mentality. And so if we can, one thing that we can do is we can support local churches that we know of that are trying to reach, you know, black people. And one of the reasons why New Life Church Catford was planted was to try and reach West Africans, because quite a lot of them are in that part of Catford. So yeah, that was a point I think Ravi was making.
Ray, can I ask you another question? What's your view of white on white and black on black evangelism? Is there any statistics saying that it's more effective when it's done within the same racial group?
I think pastors, theologians have written books on the homogeneous unit principle and the heterogeneous unit principle. And some people would argue that evangelism is better done in a homogeneous kind of setting. So the best person to reach a student is another student. The best person to reach a Muslim is a Muslim. I think there's something in that, but I think biblically speaking, the church should be diverse. I think we need to be careful that we don't let pragmatism overtake our theology in that respect, because at the end of the day, when anyone is converted, it's a work of the Spirit. So we've got to be careful that we don't take that too far. I mean, you can take things too far. If you follow that kind of logic, does that mean that I've got to be a married man to preach to married men? Does that mean that a single man can't preach on marriage to married people? So, you know, we've got to... obviously, it helps if I can relate to I'm trying to reach. But I remember having this issue in South Africa, because some of the white ministers, if a church became more black, some of the white ministers would think, well, I'm no longer qualified to be the minister of this church. And I would say, no, as long as you love these people and you faithfully preach the Bible, you can do them good. You know, let's not think that you've got to be the same colour, otherwise you can't minister to them. So I think we just got to be careful of that kind of pragmatism that overlooks what the Bible says about what church should be and how evangelism is really effective. I mean, the other thing I would say is that, you know, in my experience, we set up student churches in London, for example, or wherever it is, and they're dominated by students. But our young people, they spend all their days with students, and then they go to church and we bung them with a whole load of other students. Actually, what they need is intergenerational relationships, you know. And I think sometimes we overlook that, and that's quite critical. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to think about there, you know. Sometimes I think multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multi-class churches are much, much, much harder to grow. So I think we gravitate to what's easier. Does that make sense? Do you want to come back at me?
No, it's really interesting. Obviously, the Holy Spirit is the ultimate power. But I guess if we're evangelising non-believers, aren't we? By virtue of the fact that we're evangelising them, so they are going to look at us outwardly to begin with. And I guess by extension of that, how can we encourage our black brothers and sisters in our church? You know, we are a pretty white church, let's face it, and we're in a very multi-racial part of Sydney. And, you know, I'm conscious that, you know, as Christians, we look at ourselves a certain way,
but others look in with quite a different perspective. I might walk into a church, and hopefully my black brothers and sisters in my church walk into my church and don't feel that difference. But, you know, someone new is coming off the estate, they're going to have quite a different view. How can we fix that? How can we encourage that?
I think there's no silver bullet. I think we need to just love people. We need to work at building relationships with them, get to know them, have them in our own homes, ask them questions, find out about, you know, how they tick. I think there's no substitute for just being genuinely, authentically loving, engaging with people, finding out about them.
Yeah.
And of course, sharing the gospel, speaking the gospel as clearly, as faithfully as you can. I think all people, no matter what their background, respond to the warmth. They can smell a fake a mile off. You know, I think we just need to be genuine. But we've got the Bible to help us to understand that no matter who we lock eyes with, they're created in God's image. They deserve our dignity and our respect. Above all, they need the gospel. So let's just love and accept people, no matter who comes through your doors, whether it's someone who smells and looks like they've been sleeping on the street. Let's try to welcome them and love them and do our best to help them. I don't think it's rocket science, to be honest. I just think it's being Christian.
Thank you.
I sometimes we try to complicate these things and we come up with strategies and all sorts of fancy stuff. But actually, at the end of the day, just be a decent human being. Better still, be a Christian.
That's encouraging. Thank you.
Geetha, is that Geetha your mother, Ravi?
It's been very interesting. The only comment I'd like to make is, coming from an Asian background, especially the area and the community, whatever you would call it, I come from, there's a lot of what they don't call it racial, but they call it caste. And even now, I think, to a certain extent in India, they assume that the highest caste, i.e. the Brahmin Hindus caste, are the cleverest, and therefore the others shouldn't be. I mean, till very recently, there was a group of people who, according to law, according to God's law, for them, which is one of the things I hated about Hinduism, if you like, is that because they're scheduled caste, they're not allowed to own any land, any home, any business. And it comes from the fact that it's a very fatalistic
people. Karma, yeah.
So I've often heard my mother say, oh, yes, if something nice happens in the house, she said, it must be that I did something very good in my last life. But if something bad happened, I must have really misbehaved in my last life, yeah. And that's why. And funnily enough, Ravi, as my son, when he was 17, we went to America. There was some problem, and he turned around to me at the age of 17 and said, "Mom, we've got to take responsibility for our own lives." And I went, "Okay." I think that's one thing I've learned as a Christian. I think, you know, God loves me, whatever, and he's not going to hold anything I've done in this life.
Yes, against, yeah.
Never mind my last life.
It's
been very, very interesting to listen to. And I have made some notes, and I hope I will go back and cogitate on them and think about them.
Yes, I'm glad you've spoken, because, of course, I've been, as a black man, I've been speaking from quite a black perspective, but there'll be different perspectives, the female perspective, the Asian perspective, and there'll be other ethnic minorities in this country who will have their own stories to tell about, you know, some of the differences. So there are lots of nuances that we could talk about. So it's good to have you and to say.
The only scary bit with the Hinduism thing is because they do it because that's what God asks them to do.
Yeah.
And then even as a child, I used to argue with my grandfather. My grandmother, for example, I come from so-called the highest caste.
Yeah.
And my grandmother was desperate to get grace, which we are given free by Christ. My grandmother, if she either brushed past somebody inadvertently brushed past somebody who was of low caste. She used to go and have a bath and used to fast for the whole day.
Oh, my goodness. She was
desperate to get to the top.
Top, yeah, yeah.
Which I used to get. It used to drive me nuts as a 13-year-old. That's when I spent most time with them.
Yeah.
And I said, how can you do that? You know, they're human beings. They're God's people. Even then, even though I didn't know about anything about Christianity then.
Yeah.
So they God made them. As he made me.
Yes, yes. Even when they're getting against the grain, even then, before you're a Christian. Yeah, it's interesting, yeah. Sorry, Marie, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Mrs. Srinivasan, for that. I wanted to just also add that, if I could, that, my grandfather, who had, he was born in India and had an Indian grandmother, he also experienced racism, but he was operating within the sort of, like, white middle class environment.
Mm.
And he suffered from racism also, and I think we suspect that he internalised that and brought it here. And I think that some of the assessing of somebody in terms of whether they look like they have something to be ashamed about, I think can still be with us. I think it's really important to be mindful about how some things can come through the generations. Yeah. And still be with us today, unfortunately. Yeah. It's really helpful to be mindful of that.
I think that's right.
In the Indian community, we can see your racism. We can rate it by quite a bit. We can discriminate between people who look very similar but have a different religion, obviously, or a different caste. Steve, talking to Anthony about the attitude that some Indians hold towards the black community as well.
Yeah.
In fact, I think India is a much more racist society than either the US or the UK.